Hello, everyone. My name is Jacob Minig. I'm the host of the Behavior Health Integration Podcast. Today, we have a very special guest, Jonathan Donovan. Jonathan is a veteran, author, public speaker, thought leader, veterans advocate, and a person in long-term recovery. Jonathan is a recovery coach with over 40 years of lived recovery experience. I, for one, am truly excited to have Jonathan on my podcast. It will be an amazing experience. We are all in for a special treat. And without further ado, let's get started. John, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Yeah.
So in the interest of full disclosure, I'm a former public affairs officer with the Minnesota National Guard. I had a TV show. I had a radio show.
Wow.
I do a monthly radio show with WJON on all things recovery. So podcast is just another version of a radio show, so to speak.
True. Yeah, and one of the main reasons I really wanted you on, you know, you have great experience. You're part of the military. Now, what branch were you out of again?
So I was Army, and active duty Army, then New York National Guard, then Minnesota Army National Guard. And then I got picked up for what they call AGR, Active Guard and Reserve. Okay. So I was full-time Army, but with the Minnesota Army National Guard.
But again, I have a huge passion for the military and just the recovery for when they get back to the States. Actually, I did my thesis on exercise as an intervention with veterans with PTSD and substance use disorder. So that's always been a huge passion of mine.
Oh, fantastic. I love that. Did you do research around that thesis? Did you have a control group? And
I didn't actually do research myself. I found a bunch of research and I wrote about it.
Okay. So it was a search of the literature.
Lots of literature.
Yeah. And so what did the research hold? Although I think I could probably tell you.
Oh, definitely positive effects for sure.
Yeah.
And obviously, there's a lot of things you got to take into consideration to the type of trauma and the substances they use, their family lifestyle going back, because so many things change when a military man or woman comes back. It's not the same. It's the same family, but it's just different. And I'm sure you can allude to a lot of that kind of stuff. You know.
Yeah, on one of the deployments that I came back from, one of our soldiers, unfortunately, helped change Minnesota law.
Okay.
So are you familiar with the, what did we call it? USERA, the Uniformed Services Soldier and Sailor Civil Relief Act?
Mm-mm. What's that? No.
So basically, it was implemented during World War II. You know, when you have a national call up, millions of men and women serving, and there were some predatory practices. Oh, well, so and so's in Europe right now fighting and defending our country, so we're going to sue them. And then when they don't show up in court, well, then we win.
Oh, man. Right.
So they passed this uniform. Soldier and Sailor Civil Relief Act, which said basically, if you're in the Army, you can't be sued.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Makes sense. You know, all court proceedings are going to be on hold until such time as you come back. Makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but when you deploy, if you're married, and even if you're not, but you're going to have things like maybe an apartment that you're keeping, car payments, student loans, you know, just other kinds of responsibilities that, you know, when you're fighting and your head's in the game and you're deployed, you know, oh boy, did I write that check to my student loan?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just doesn't cross the. So typically we'll give somebody close to us a power of attorney. You know, most of us who are married, we'll give it to our spouse, but if you're single, mom, dad. And then when things come up like, oh, he got that notice about his car payment, I'm just going to write a check because he's probably going to forget. No shame, no harm, no fault. All right. Except when your wife wants a divorce and she hasn't told you.
Yep.
And she's writing you letters while you're deployed, telling you how rosy things are while she has put the house on the market.
No.
Cleaned out your bank account, sold your car, and then closes on the house, takes all the proceeds, and moves to the Dakotas.
Oh, my God.
So literally, this kid comes home to find somebody else in his home.
Dear God.
So based on that, we were able to get Minnesota law changed. So now there's a law in the books that says if you are deployed, not only can you not be taken to court in accordance with the Soldier and Sailor Civil Relief Act, but your significant other cannot sell the house.
Yep.
So how that basically states, I'm not sure, but it's probably like transactions, even if you have a power of attorney, transactions to exceed $5,000 are null and void until such time as the service member can come back.
Okay. I gotcha. Wow, that's really interesting. It reminds me of that part of the movie. Have you ever seen Thank You for Your Service?
Yeah.
And the one guy, he has a girlfriend and they're not married yet, but he goes home and finds his apartment just empty. She took everything, maxed out his cards, and I think that's the right story. I could be missing some details. And then he committed suicide, but yeah.
Well, then, you know, and the what was the one, Leathernecks with Jamie Foxx, where he plays a Marine?
Okay, I haven't seen that one yet.
I think and part of it is they're in Afghanistan. And in the middle of their compound, they have the Dear John post.
Okay.
And so every Marine that gets a Dear John letter, they take it and they tack it up on the post like a badge of honor.
Yeah. So again, I've always been a huge fan and supporter of the military, and that's why it's such an honor having you. And I just feel like we're going to get into a lot of great stuff, and my listeners are going to strongly benefit from this experience as well as I am.
Well, thank you. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here today. And thank you for what you're doing on behalf of the recovery community.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. So just to start off, so tell me if this is wrong. Like, you're in high school, and then did something motivate you initially to get into, which I believe is the Army, right?
That's correct. Yeah, actually, it was the polar opposite. When I was in high school, the Russians had invaded Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. Ronald Reagan had reinstituted the draft, selective service. So if you were 18, you had to go down to the post office and fill out a postcard and register for the draft. Mm-hmm. And I was vehemently opposed to it. I grew up in the shadow of Vietnam. I okay. wasn't old enough for Vietnam service, but I went to school with a lot of Vietnam vets. And what I mean by that is that when I was in college, they were going back to college on their GI Bill. And I always just had this affinity for the Vietnam generation. I'm on the tail end of the baby boomer generation. So if you look in some social books, I'm a Gen Xer. And if you look in others, I'm a late baby boomer. Okay. And you know, I don't think I have anything in my music collection post 1979, because I just didn't think that they made good music after that. And so when the Reagan reinstituted the draft, I was like, no, I'm not going. I'm a conscientious objector. I saw what happened in Vietnam.
Yeah.
Not going to do it. Not going to do it. And 4 years later, I'm getting ready to graduate from college. The economy sucks. Mm-hmm. Interest rates are like 17%. Student loan rates were 9%. My buddies were graduating, and the best job that they could get was waiting a table at a local restaurant. And I just thought, I didn't spend 4 years at college to wait tables.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting at home. This little commercial comes on. It had kind of a catchy jingle. Maybe you remember it. It said, be all that you can
Yep.
be. And I thought, that's it. I'll join the army. They'll pay back my student loans. I won't have any debt. So my objective in joining the army was purely to get my college paid for, to get my student loans paid for. I signed up for 3 years. I was getting out. They were going to pay off my student loans. I would leave the army debt free. And 27 years later, I retired.
So you learned to love it in a sense.
You know, it really, it gave me a lot of opportunity for growth, for professional development. I ended up living over in Europe for 10 years, which was a highlight of my life. From there, I went to Saudi Arabia. I got to live in
Wow.
the city of Jeddah, Saudi Arabia for a year. From there, I transferred up to upstate New York, where I joined the New York National Guard. I got to be a part of their organization for 9 months. And then I transferred back to Minnesota. I joined up with the Minnesota Army National Guard. I was with them for 2 years. I put in paperwork to get a commission. I was commissioned a Butter Bar second lieutenant in December of 2000. I was married to the love of my life in July of 2001. And 3 months later, 9/11 happened. I was called up for active duty and I stayed there for the next 18 years.
Okay. Wow. And again, I don't know where to begin, but I can only imagine from me interviewing past veterans, obviously there's a lot of stressful moments in a veteran's life, and especially just being a military member. Again, I don't know what you did for the Army exactly. Would you mind telling us what you?
Yeah, absolutely. Just a little bit of everything.
Okay.
I was never a grunt, 11 Bravo, 11 Bang Bang, as it's referred to in the infantry. But I was assigned to infantry companies
okay.
and worked with them in their human resources section.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot of my career in the human resources field, but I served as an aide de camp to a two-star general. I was the senior human resources officer for a battalion of 1,000 men. I was a brigade human resources officer for a brigade of 4,000 soldiers. I worked as the state equal employment manager, where I had a caseload of 13,000 soldiers and airmen. I worked as a public affairs officer at Camp Ripley, where I was responsible for a monthly publication, a weekly radio show, a monthly TV show, as well as community relations in and around the Little Falls area. So during my 27 years, I had a myriad of job experiences.
And throughout that time, would you see a lot of soldiers maybe struggling with stress, anxiety, PTSD? And how do you feel like our system helps them? Do you think our system is adequate in helping soldiers recover from traumatic events? Or do you think there's a lot of improvements we can make?
Well, yes, absolutely. To answer the first question, did I see soldiers struggle with it? Yes, absolutely. I did three tours, officially combat tours, although one was a peacekeeping mission in Bosnia, but two tours to Iraq.
Mm.
And one of the tours that I did to Iraq was in 2007. I joined for 6 months, but that tour had actually started in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
So the 1st Brigade Combat Team, the 1st BCT out of Bloomington,
oh.
Minnesota, they deployed and their training area was Camp Shelby, Mississippi. And they got there just right after Katrina. And so the infrastructure was hammered. Much of it was destroyed. A lot of the creature comforts that they would have enjoyed were gone.
Mm-hmm.
It was very sparse. It was very difficult training. And then not only that, the tedium and the boredom, the monotony, 6 months in this area, where after about 3 months, they really felt like they were ready to go. But the big army said, no, you got to wait until the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing worse than being ready to do something and then just hurry up and wait, hurry up and wait, hurry up and wait. And then they deployed. They were supposed to come home in March of 2007, and they got caught up in what history now calls the double down strategy, the surge. And that's where we plussed up forces to quell the insurgency that was going on in Iraq. And so they had their hearts and their minds set at being home with their families in March. And then in January, they found out that they were going to be there until July. And, it was very disheartening, very, very hard for them to take emotionally. Plus the coping technique that you develop, I can see the light at the end of the tunnel, the light at the end of the tunnel, and suddenly the light becomes snuffed out and terribly hard to deal with. Many of them came home, and those problems that you describe, post-traumatic stress disorder or just combat stress, the ways that we see that manifest, substance abuse, divorce, depression, unfortunately, suicide. They don't happen right away. They happen over a period of time. The first initial phase is going to be euphoria and kind of a honeymoon phase. The joy and jubilation of coming home and reuniting with one's family and friends. But then what we do is they've built up so much vacation time that they have almost like a month to burn. And then there was some things that happened where they got some additional time. And so some of the guys and gals ended up having a really long, extended period of time off, which you think would be really rejuvenating, except when everybody around you has to go to work or school, all you do is just kind of sit there and wait for them to come home. And, you know, and. And so then you get into this pattern of, well, I'm playing video games till late at night. I'm sleeping until the middle of the day. It just throws off your biorhythms. It throws off your work routine. You become kind of restless and irritable and discontent. And it really wasn't healthy.
May I ask you personally, if you don't mind me asking, did you experience any of those when you came back or
So when I came back, one of the things I said to one of the docs at the VA was, I thought my headspace and timing was off. I was like, Doc, everything seems like it's in slow motion, and I'm everything feels like I'm moving through water. It just is odd, and it's displaced. And then he said, well, what did you do? And I described the nature of my work. I was responsible for the human resources of a 1,000-person battalion. It was my crew's responsibility to inform the commander if there were any deaths or injuries, multiple injuries on that tour. And God rest their souls. Unfortunately, we lost 20 soldiers. And I was constantly on call. There are no days off. And he's going north and south. I see, he said, yeah. You're withdrawing from adrenaline. And I'm like, oh, come on, Doc. I've never heard of that before. What the? He goes, yeah, your body has been living on adrenaline for the last 180 days, and you are jonesing from it. And it's going to be about 2 weeks, and then you'll start to feel normal. And he was right to about the day. About 2 weeks afterwards, I started to feel. Oh, wow, my head is catching up with my thoughts, and my body seems to move in coordination with the rest of me. And but there were some dark places. There were some real dark places I went, and I had to seek out the advice and guidance of a spiritual pastor, friends in recovery, self-help meetings, which all got me through those places and those dark spots.
And were there like psychologists at the VA that military men and women could see too?
Well,
If they wanted
sure.
to? And I get
Yeah,
mixed
absolutely.
feelings. No offense to the VA, but I've heard from some people it's decent. I've heard from some people the mental health is actually pretty bad there.
You know, And this is what I'll tell you about it, because I have been a recipient of those psychological services. I equate it a lot to a state university. My master's is in education and counseling, and I did college
Nice.
counseling, and I would have a lot of parents come up to me and go, "Well, we're thinking about sending Johnny to a private school, but there is the state university, and it's a lot less expensive. And what do you think?" And I would say this: Johnny's going to get out of the state university what he puts into it. At the private college, it's going to be more accountable. They're actually probably going, part of his grade is going to be on attendance. And there's like, there isn't a grade, but we all know if you show up, you suit up, you sit toward the front of the class, you raise your hand a lot, you engage in discussion, that helps with your grade. And that may not necessarily be the case at a state university where you're in a freshman kind of weeder course of 300 people. And so the person going to the state run, state-funded institution is just going to have to apply themselves. And if they apply themselves, they will get a lot out of it. And oh, by the way, oftentimes their labs, their resources, their gymnasiums, all those accoutrements that you would have at a university, right? It's going to be top of the line. So too with psychological services and counseling at your VA. You're going to get out of it what you put into it. Now, you could go to private practice, right? And they might hold you more accountable. You're going to pay. You're going to pay out of pocket, or there's going to be a copay associated with it. But at the VA, you might have to direct your services. If you're not getting what you want from the counselor that you've been assigned or the psychologist that you've been assigned, you can say, "I want another psychologist. This one ain't doing it for me." Be a consumer, a good consumer, an informed consumer of your mental health services, right? Don't lean back. In the military, we would tell guys, lean forward in the foxhole. In other words, anticipate what's coming down and make choices in regard to those challenges. That's the same mindset I want to take them through and have them have in regard to getting their mental health services. Be an advocate for yourself, be a consumer. Think of it in terms of, if I was paying for this, would I be satisfied? And if not, say something.
Yes.
Say something. And they have a whole department that'll work with you on that. There's a customer complaint department. They will listen to you and they will hear you out. And then they will assign you another counselor.
No, I cannot agree with you more. I hear from so many clients too, where yeah, they have significant issues, and I don't know if the first session didn't work out very well, or the second, and they just leave therapy without even trying to get a new therapist. And like you said, where is the effort? Where is the effort you're putting in to better yourself? 9 out of 10 times, I don't see that from clients who continue to struggle. It's
Yeah,
tough.
absolutely. And then, and funny, it's the same kind of mindset that we would have in the military, right? If they were working with a young soldier, and they were the drill sergeant, not the necessarily a drill sergeant, but just the NCO who was in charge of their training, right? Which is a very commonplace. So the majority of the U.S. Army are going to be enlisted, and the majority of those enlisted are going to be NCOs. And they're going to have the responsibility at some point of training some other people. And so to tell them, like, oh, yeah, after 2 times, if your soldier didn't make it, totally washed out. Yeah, they're gone. Said no NCO ever. Right? What they said was, okay, we're going to double down here, buddy. Guess what? We started off at 6 this morning. Tomorrow morning it's 5. And if that don't work out, that's okay. We can get up at 4. And we just can keep doing this until you get it right. Because I am so concerned about you, I'm going to stay here with you until we pass this successfully. Well, if they take that attitude into their own mental health counseling and say, you know what, doc? One time a week ain't cut it for me. I need to see you more than that. Or, doc, this ain't going anywhere that I like. I want to see somebody else. Or, hey, I want to bring my spouse in here because so much of the stuff that we're talking about is related to my spouse. and let's get it out. Let's bring her in. Let's do counseling with her. To drive that train, right? To drive your own mental health. Yeah, absolutely. They're there to reflect and they're there to have insight and guidance and mentorship. Absolutely. But be an active participant in it.
Absolutely. Hey, just have you ever heard of the speaker named Sebastian Younger before? He does a lot of TED Talks. He's a sociologist.
Yeah, I think so. Yes.
Yeah, I really love his work. And he, again, talks about like the issues that veterans have when they come back. I'm just wondering if you agree with this one thing where he says, and he kind of compares it to, God, the old Apache Indians back in the day, like when their culture and society honored their soldiers or their warriors. And when those warriors came back from a battle, they'd be cheered on, they'd be respected, loved for, cared for. Where compared to the United States, or when our veterans come back, our society doesn't really have that love and appreciation for them, for the work that they've done. Do you see any truth in that?
Well, I think it's one of the lessons that we learned from Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll give you a real life story. That deployment that we had in 2007, and again, I was with them for 6 months, but most of those guys had been gone for almost 2 years. They were gone for 22 months. So the battalion that I had, the human resources section, we put on a homecoming ceremony for the soldiers associated with it. Now, having said that, we were participants, better said, we were participants in this homecoming ceremony, right? So when we showed up, there was the award ceremony, there was a military band, there was a banquet, there was, you know, the slideshow presentation, you know, all the flourishes that you would see with a really nice homecoming ceremony. And I'm an event planner. That was one of the things that I did in the military. And I'm looking around and I'm like, this was a ton of work. I mean, if you've ever done anything like that, you've hosted a party, you've done a wedding, you know, just think about that. And then now times that by about 10. And that's what it takes up to put on one of these military ceremonies. So I said, who did all of this? Yeah. I mean, this was a huge amount of work.
Yep.
Who put this on? And I was directed to three dudes who were sitting in the back of the auditorium. And I went up to them and I said, guys, this is awesome. Thank you. Thank you for what you did. But tell me, why? Why did you do this for us? And they said that they were all Vietnam veterans. And they just wanted to make sure that this generation of soldiers received what they never did and never got when they came home.
Amen. When you said Vietnam, come back home, I just cringed because I've read a lot of books and movies and I heard horrendous stories of when they came back and how they were treated by the community and by people. And I don't want to get too far off topic, but like media plays a role in that, especially with Vietnam. And it's just extremely sad. Again, I'm not going to repeat the stories that I've heard, but it's incredibly sad about how those men and women were treated when they came back.
Well, in getting to your point about mental health, PTSD, combat stress. So, you know, one of the things that we see now and that psychology has coined is moral injury. And so when I've been in combat and I've had to do things that go against my value system, and it's oftentimes those injuries, there are no scars associated with them. You don't see me carry that, but I carry that. It is in me.
Internals.
And so it affects my outlook. It affects my affect. It affects my mood. And if I'm given a homecoming where people are surrounding me and supporting me and telling me that it's okay, and that we know you had to do things over there that were ugly, and we don't care and we don't judge you. You did that in the line of duty and you are important to us. That helps alleviate some of that. It's not going to dissipate all of it, but but it helps tremendously. Whereas if you're getting a message of, we don't care about you, you were wrong, you shouldn't have done that, boy, that's just going to compound that moral injury, and it's going to prolong that healing process. And here's what I told community leaders, you know, for the years that I was on active duty and doing presentations. Look at folks, these guys and gals, nobody comes home from war unchanged. I don't care if you were in the infirmary or the infantry. I don't care if you were combat service support or you were in direct combat. Everybody comes home from war changed. And you can help with that change up front, or you can pay for it on the back end. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, helping and doing it up front is far more effective, both emotionally and cost effectively. But if you wait and you pay for it on the back end, it just means that those wounds and those injuries have had time to fester, and it's going to cost a lot more money,
yes,
to help fix those problems. And that's what we saw with the Vietnam generation. We had thousands of homeless veterans, veterans who were suffering from substance use disorder, veterans who were sharing needles, veterans who were suffering from Hep C, veterans who were suffering from depression and divorce. And then the society finally in the early to mid 80s said, oh, you know, we should really do something about the Vietnam generation. Good, great. But if you guys had done that back in 72, 73, 74, 75, it wouldn't have nearly been as dark and bad as it got.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And again, I don't want to get too off topic, because I'll just be honest, like, I just seen a lot of movies, and I obviously wasn't around back then. But again, the media, I'm sure, had a lot to do with that. And just the people going in with the media, having certain thoughts, and then portraying those thoughts with the veterans, like, they were those people. And I apologize if I didn't, I don't know. I'm just trying to.
Well, one of the things that I would tell people in the community presentations that I would do is, hey, look, if you've got a household problem, right, and you grab a screwdriver and you go to fix something and it didn't work out, do you sit there and scream and shout and spit at the screwdriver? No, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. You know what the screwdriver is in this analogy? The United States Army. It is a tool of foreign diplomacy.
Yeah.
It is a tool of the government, right? You don't blame the tool, right? Blaming the tool is ridiculous. It makes no sense whatsoever. If you want to see change, right, then hold the decision makers accountable.
Yeah.
It's really quite simple. And most of our decision makers come up for re-election every 2 years. Some of them come up 4 years, and some of them come up for 6 years. But every couple of years, we've got an opportunity to go in and voice our opinion and to make our opinion known.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like being involved in your therapy, right? You got to suit up and show up. And so, too, if you're leaning back and letting others make decisions for you, well, they might not make decisions that you like. You got to be at the table. Because if you're not at the table, you're on the menu.
That's you holding yourself accountable and you being an advocate for yourself as well.
Here, here.
Yep. So, John, I want to go back to your story a little bit too. So you're back here, and I know you said you had some issues, and you don't need to get into those issues in depth, but I'm just wondering, was there a particular sign or event that really told you, okay, like, I need help. I need to do something to better my life for myself, but not only for myself, but my family as well.
Yeah, there was a moment in my transition, you know, coming back from deployment, that I was in a really, really dark space. And I went to a spiritual advisor, a pastor whom I greatly admire and trust. And I shared with her what I was going through. And she said, you know, when you're talking, I'm reminded of the words of St. Paul. And St. Paul said, when I'm at my weakest, I'm at my strongest. And I realized in that moment that I was dealing with something, trying to deal with it on an emotional and intellectual level, and it was really spiritual in its origin. And that when I looked for a spiritual answer and a spiritual source, well, my affect, my mood, my disposition changed dramatically. And that was, you know, that was a foundational moment for me. I had another conversation with a good friend of mine, a guy who's long-term in recovery, just celebrated 45 years of recovery.
Wow.
And, you know, I told him, hey, I'm going to this meeting and, you know, I'm just not getting a lot out of it. Wham, wham, wham. And, you know, he did an emotional slap upside the head, you know, not a physical, but an emotional one. And he said to me, JD, when are you going to stop going to these meetings for yourself and start going for somebody else? And when I did that attitudinal change, I never went to a bad meeting after that, because I always looked for somebody who was in a place that needed some help. Mm-hmm. Maybe they were standing back. Maybe they were kind of hesitant at the door. They were hanging around the water cooler or the coffee pot. They just didn't look comfortable in their skin. And that would be the person I would seek out. Hey, how you doing? Your first time here? Are you new here? Let me introduce you to a few people. And, you know, just the act of doing that made me feel better. I don't know if the other person got anything out of it, hopefully. But I know that I felt better, and I was mission accomplishment. Mm-hmm. I went in there to help. And I helped, and I could leave there with the idea that I accomplished my mission. I'm responsible for the effort. I let the higher power take care of the outcomes.
Well, in a sense, you're like that spiritual hand, and maybe that, like, a lot of the times that's all people need is just that hand out to help them. You know, it does a lot more than you think it does. You know, and I don't want to say it to everyone too, just have that hand out.
And, you know, and that's part of suiting up and showing up, because when I take a piece off the chessboard, right, I can't use it anymore. And so when I don't go, when I don't show up, when I don't suit up, when I don't follow through on my obligations and duties and responsibilities, it's the equivalent of taking a piece off the chessboard. Because the master chess player, he needs all those pieces, right? And you just don't know when you're going to be moved, right? But on that particular day, you know, you might be that pawn that becomes a queen.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny too.
In a chess analogy.
Yeah. Well, the beautiful thing too about like building relationships with people and like sponsors and sponsees or just veterans and non-veterans is that we could all learn something from one another. It doesn't matter how many years like you have recovery over someone else. It's like, it's a beautiful thing where you can just learn different aspects about life from someone else.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I just heard my sponsor, who's got 45 years of recovery. I just celebrated 44 years of recovery.
Congrats.
Thank you. Thank you. But I just overheard him speaking to his sponsee the other day, and his sponsee must have asked him, like, you know, do you think I'm ready to sponsor? Mm-hmm. And his response, I only got his response, but I assumed what the question was. And he said to him, yes, absolutely. And oh, by the way, you're going to get far more from your sponsees than they'll ever get from you. and that's so true. Mm-hmm. The people that I work with, the guys that I work with, they fill me with enthusiasm. They fill me with a vigor for life. I see how excited they are about their program and their recovery, and it gets me re-excited about mine. And, you know, after 44 years, it's easy to become complacent, rest on your laurels, and yeah, been there, done that. But then I see them get excited about it, and I'm like, dang, I want some of that too. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Now, I also have to ask you, you were a recent author of a book. Is that true?
Yeah.
Would you like to tell us a little more about that?
Yeah, sure. So it was my COVID project.
Nice.
You know, I probably suffer from a little bit of ADD, self-diagnosed. I, my friend of mine says, you just don't let the grass grow underneath you, do you? And I don't. I'm
No.
always working on a project. And then when COVID hit, I was like, oh boy, I got to stay in for a while. And after you binge a couple series on Netflix, and I was like, I need to do something productive. And I had done a lot of recovery blogging. I had done a lot of recovery writing for civilian blogs and also in the military. And now in this digital age, you're just able to save copies electronically. And so wherever I went, whether I'd written in Iraq or Saudi Arabia or Germany, I just had a file of all these things that I had written. So during COVID, I just kind of took a literary needle and thread and started kind of sewing those stories together. And the end result, 18 months later, was a book that we entitled A Soldier's Recovery Journey. It came out in April of 21, just a little over a year ago. And it's my story on recovery, having sobered up when I was 15 years old, what it was like to be a teenager, going to high school in recovery, what it was like to go to college and be in recovery, and then ultimately what it was like to be in recovery while I was a member of the armed forces. During Vietnam, World War II, World War I, there were thousands of GIs who said, I can't imagine going to war without having a drink. And now hundreds of GIs like myself say, I can't imagine going to war without the program of recovery.
Absolutely. No, that's very powerful. That really is. So I'm curious, moving forward now, are there certain projects you want to get into? Or are there programs do you feel like would help the veterans out more?
Well, there's certainly a lot of programs. Currently, I'm working as the director of the Recovery Community Network in St. Cloud. We're a recovery community organization. We provide services free of charge, to people who are living with or seeking help with a substance use disorder. But this also goes to a point that I was making earlier. Right now, throughout the United States, every nook and cranny of the United States will be receiving the opioid settlement money. That is 200 and I'm sorry, stand corrected, $25 billion. $25 billion. The state attorneys general settled this claim against Big Pharma, and now that money is finally starting to flow down to the states. And so for your listeners who may be listening to this, again, advocacy, because some of that money, not all of it, but some of that money is to go to recovery. And if people in recovery don't speak up and say, hey, where's that money? Is it going toward recovery? Folks, it's not going to go there, right? Because decisions are made by those who show up. That's why you got to show up and suit up. You got to be at the table. Because, like I said earlier, if you're not at the table, you'll be on the menu. And one of the things on the menu will be that money that's devoted for recovery, because it'll end up going toward, and I'm not disparaging these other things, but it'll end up going toward housing or end up going to incarceration or end up going to, the sheriff's department. And granted, they've all been devastated by the opioid epidemic, and they are all deserving of funds to help address that. But so do people in recovery. And if they don't speak up, they won't direct that money toward recovery.
I have another question too. Do you think another part of the system that can be improved is veterans getting their benefits quicker? Because again, I sometimes watch movies, and I know you can't believe everything you see in movies, but a lot of them kind of portray like how difficult it is for certain veterans to get their benefits, and that there could be a better, more faster, efficient way of doing that.
Yeah, so again, you got to drive that train. You got to be a good self-advocate, right? So, let the paper pushers do their job, but also, find out, reasonably speaking, when can I expect this to be adjudicated? When can I expect a response on this? And then hold them, make a little annotation in your electronic file or your notebook or however you mark time. Put it on your calendar. On the 15th of this month, I'm supposed to hear something back. And if you don't, on the 16th, you're sending off an email. Hey, just wanted to ask, right? And then I tell people all the time, you got to be persistent, but you got to be polite, right? Persistent, but polite. And we do know the squeaky wheel gets the grease, right? If you keep asking, you keep asking, you keep asking, don't go off. Don't give them a reason not to do your file or do your claim, but be persistent, be polite. Then, after an appropriate amount of time, whether that's 1 week, 2 weeks, that you've got to be kind of the judge of that, then you can get other agencies involved. For example, you can go to your elected officials, your federally elected officials, your representatives, and or the two senators from Minnesota. And they are very, very good about getting to the bottom of this, because those agencies hate this little term. It's called congressional inquiry. They hate those things because it creates a lot of pain in the office when they have to answer a congressional inquiry. But you are fully entitled and fully within your rights, if you've given an appropriate amount of time for this claim to be done and it hasn't been done, to say, I'm going to ask my congressman or my senator to look into this.
Oh, absolutely. I'd ask you, do you ever do work with the Wounded Warrior Project, or do you know much about them, or what are your thoughts on that?
Well, certainly, as the director of the Recovery Community Network, one of the things that we do is information referral, information and referral, information referral. We can't do it all. We cannot do it all. But what we do is establish partnerships with those brother agencies, those sister agencies that do provide that service. So if we have somebody who comes to us who is a wounded warrior, they are going to be top on our list. We work with other organizations like Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. We work with Teed Up for the Troops. We work with the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. We work with Stand Down. We work with Disabled American Veterans organizations, Vietnam Veterans of America. You name it, if there's an organization out there that helps veterans, service members, and their families, and we don't provide that service, we are going to do a warm handoff to that agency that's going to help them get those services that they so richly and rightfully deserve.
Well, and like you mentioned earlier, how important it is to keep someone busy, especially coming back from war, like activities to do or jobs, where again, I'm always super supportive of programs like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I tell my staff, all we're doing is giving back to those who have given to us. They have served us, and now we're going to serve them. One of the things that one Iraq veteran said in a Memorial Day speech was, all a service member wants to do is serve for a citizen worth serving for. Be a citizen worth serving for. Right. And it makes my job as a soldier so much easier, because when I have folks who are the bedrock of our community, who are doing the right thing, who are sending care packages, who are taking care of my family, then I want to take care of you overseas. That's the contract that we make with the American society. We'll take care of the war front. You guys take care of the home front.
Amen. That's a beautiful, strong thing, man. It really is. And if we had that mindset, our place would be so much better.
Hear, hear.
Yep. Well, before we wrap things up, I have to ask you, I know you're doing so much. Again, do you have any like future projects you want to work on, or maybe like another book down the road you want to get into? Any thoughts?
Well, one of the things that I'm looking at right now is transferring my duties and responsibilities from the Recovery Community Network, which I've been the director of for several years now, and I'll be transitioning off and moving over to the chairman of the board. And so I will have a different role and responsibility in that. But right now, I'm setting up my successor for success. Cynthia Magallanes, young woman in recovery, has a master's in public administration from St. Cloud State University. We were very, very lucky to find her in terms of taking over the responsibilities. So right now, I want to make that transition as smooth as possible so that she can be set up for success. In the military, we call that our left seat, right seat ride. So I'm taking all the stuff that's up here in my brain and gray matter, and I'm transferring it over to her, trying to codify those processes and procedures so that the organization can move smoothly and continue to expand the services of providing services to the recovery community of Central Minnesota.
Well, shout out to Cynthia. Best of luck, right? And good, here. Good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, before we close out, if any of my listeners do want to get a hold of you, is there a particular email address they can use or LinkedIn or whatnot?
Yeah, absolutely. You can always reach me through our website, which is recoverycommunitynetwork.com, all one word, spelled just like it sounds, recoverycommunitynetwork.com. Or you can send an email to recoverycommunitynetwork@gmail.com, all one word, spelled just like it sounds, recoverycommunitynetwork@gmail.com.
And Soldier's Recovery Journey, the book, is it on Amazon?
It is sold exclusively through Books Revisited Downtown St. Cloud. Again, the name of that store is Books Revisited, and it is sold exclusively through them.
And I'll make sure I put that link on my show notes so my listeners can get a hold of that.
Outstanding.
Well, again, John, thank you so much for being on the show. It was an honor.
Well, thank you. It's been a great pleasure in chatting with you, and I hope your listeners continue to listen to this program and tune in faithfully, because the information that you're bringing is so vitally important to not only individuals and their own mental health, but to our communities. This is good stuff, and this is important stuff, and we need to get the message out there.
Thank you, John. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet.
I again just want to express my thanks for having John as a special guest for my show. And I also want to thank all of my listeners for your support. I just want to inform everyone that the information and content expressed in this episode was not meant to be taken as therapeutic advice. If you do find yourself struggling with any type of mental health or addiction issues, please seek the care of a licensed medical doctor or a licensed mental health therapist. All right, everyone, thank you and have a good day. Bye.